Sonic Interventions, a podcast by Intervening Arts.
Welcome to the new season of Sonic Interventions. My name is Jan Dammel. I am a postdoctoral researcher at the Collaborative Research Center Intervening Arts and have the privilege to host season 5 of this podcast. Sonic Interventions was conceived of by Dr. Laila Zami, who hosted seasons 1 and 3. The other two seasons were hosted by other colleagues from the Research Center. Emma Lowe produced season 2 and Adriana Raczakowski season 4. In this season, we focus on artistic interventions in Berlin and other cities in Germany from recent months and years that deal, amongst other topics, with colonialism and its ongoing legacies. The season pivots around conversations with artists who use sound as a primary medium or one medium amongst many. And first and foremost, we will invite Black, African, and Afro-diasporic artists. Today's episode features two guests, a curator and an artist who collaborated on the same recent exhibition in Berlin. The later part of this episode will feature my conversation with Nadia Ufuate-Alazar, who is the manager and artistic director of the Berlin-based civil society organization Each One Teach One, EOTO e.V., where she curates, for instance, every summer in Berlin Wedding, the Afrolution Literature and Culture Festival. For this episode, however, I spoke to her in her function as director of, amongst other things, the annual Decoloniale Berlin Residency within the pilot project Decoloniale Memory Culture in the City, which in November 2024 opened its last exhibition, Decoloniale What Remains. This exhibition, across various sites in the cityscape of Berlin, included the exhibition Colonial Ghosts, Resistance Spirits, in which five artists in residence presented original works in Berlin's St. Nicholas Church. And now I'm very pleased to welcome one of these artists joining us online, namely Percy Ninotti. Welcome, Percy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm grateful to be part of this. Yeah.
So great to have you. Thanks for accepting our invitation. As you agree, Percy, I will introduce you to listeners with a bio. Here we go. Percy Ninotti is a multidisciplinary artist born and working in Kumasi, Ghana. His practice explores materiality, identity, labor, and memory, blurring the boundaries between performative objects, painting, sound installations, moving sculptures, and video installation. His practice is deeply rooted in his personal as well as environmental and economic conditions of Ghana, and aims to decolonize minds and empower Black communities to reclaim agency over their narratives and identities. We surely will get to this empowerment aspect once we speak about your recent installation in Berlin. But first of all, dear Percy, could you maybe describe a bit your artistic practice in general? With which media do you work? What concerns or interests do you pursue? And if you want, feel free to also speak to earlier works, such as the installation Poetics of Material Memory you presented at Brazil House in Accra in 2019.
Okay, thank you for your question. So basically, I'm an artist who mostly uses secondhand fabrics due to its history and how this fabric can also be the possibilities of repurposing this fabric. So I use mostly secondhand fabrics that are imported to Ghana, and I send this fabric to the working class people because that's the environment where I grew up, and based on the relationship with these people, I found it very interesting to send these materials to them because of the topics that I also talk in my work, like topics of labor, decolonization, and the rest. So they use the material for their daily activities, and that's where I go back to collect these materials, because I realized that after some time, it's charged with a lot of, you know, elements such as grease, oil, dirt, due to the struggle of their daily activities. So that's an entry point for me in producing my work. So also, when it comes to sound, I mostly collect sound from the environment, the places where I visit. I normally record sounds from these places and use it in my work in a subtle way. So I also fetch some topics when they are topics that mostly interest me. I hear this topic, I also try to fuse all these in the production of my sound. So basically, that's the materials I usually work around. To talk about my exhibition Poetics of Material Memory,
yeah.
I think it was in 2019 or so, after I graduated from the art school in Kumasi, KNUST, my first solo exhibition. And this exhibition was looking at the material, the labor in the production of the working class, like when they go to their activities and the production that goes on. I was much interested in it because I realized that the work of these people are very important, but they don't get the needed attention in terms of, you know, recognitions and also honoring these people. So these kind of ideas expanded through my practice from 2019 to the work that I did in Berlin. For that exhibition, I was looking at machine in a way, because I was also interested in the human and machine relationship and how these machine can also, you know, have this form of life. Mm-hmm. And also, when I'm talking about machine having this form of life, I also ask myself this question about the ability of machine to also reincarnate in a form of giving another life to this machine and the objects that I work with. So basically, that's the idea of the work that I was doing. So through that, I was able to create the sculptural pieces with the fabrics. And as I mentioned, of sound, how people can also relate with the work with most of the senses, because I don't know the people who will be visiting the space. So I'm much concerned with our senses in terms of our visuals, how people also smell, how people also listen. So when you come to the space, it was more like due to the fabrics, when I send it to these spaces, it also accumulates smell. Mm-hmm. And I realized when people entered the space, you know, people were talking about where is the smell coming from and all that. So I think I also achieved that part of it. So
yeah.
And also the sound also, you know, invited people to also interact with their work.
Great. Thank you so much. At this point, I already want to point listeners to your great website, personynaughty.com, and we will put it in the show notes, with mm-hmm. great photos and a lot of textual material. So you document your works and then people also can have a visual impression of it. The engagement of communities where you work, where you live, especially mm-hmm. working class community, seems to be a central component of your working progress.
Yes.
If I look now at the photos of Poetics of Material Memory, it was like a gallery space and you had those smaller fabrics knitted together. You can explain me how you put them together.
Okay, so
and then you have objects on plinths.
Yeah,
so can you maybe explain us what is the travel of these fabrics? You said you receive them, you give them to people. Mm-hmm, tell us about the process.
Okay, so mostly these are the fabrics they imported, they send it to Ghana. And I realized that most of the secondhand fabrics that come to Ghana come from Europe. This is as a result of, you know, issue of fast fashion and this ultra fast fashion, mm-hmm. where now people just buy materials, buy clothing, and it's made of plastic, polyester, and all these things. And they just wear it for like mostly a month, they dump it and they go and buy other clothing. And one thing that they don't know is these fabrics, they target as a form of donation, which later ends up in the African continent. And when the ones that ends up in the African continent comes in a form of grades. So they have first grade, second grade, third grade, and you know, the rest. And the worst ones mostly comes to Africa. This also caused a huge problem in terms of Africa now being a dumping site, because most of these fabrics that come to Africa are not really in good shape. So when the market women and the men buy this fabric and they realize that about 40% of these fabrics are in bad shape, they can't sell it. In this case, they lose money, and it also causes a problem for the nation because now they send it to the dumping site. Mm-hmm. So that became an interesting topic for me I decided to also collect this material and also buy some of these bills to also know what is also in these bills. So that's the reason why I use these materials. And it dates back to the colonial, not even the colonial, post-colonial era where, you know, Ghana gained independence. And
In 1957,
and the issue of Nkrumah, the first prime minister, being overthrown, and later on, the same year that Nkrumah was overthrown, the party that overthrew Nkrumah later decided to go to IMF, and IMF had a policy for them. And now there is a trade liberalization, and now the gate is open for Ghana to import a lot of goods, and which became a problem for us. And where we cut subsidies for the factories that produce the wax prints, these fabrics that is really authentic to, you know, to Ghana and also Africa as a whole. So this became a problem because now everyone can import. Mm-hmm. And people were into that business. And at a point, it was very lucrative. That's where the conversation starts from. And I collect this material, as I mentioned, and I distribute them because I was interested in the labor and how labor, in a way, can be represented visually. So I was interested in how the traces of their daily activities are printed on this material. So
whom do you distribute them?
To the working class, the market women, the auto mechanics, and a whole lot of people. So, yeah, but mostly I engage a lot with the market women and the auto mechanics. Mm-hmm. After it has been charged with this, you know, element, I go and collect it back. I leave it with them for some time, maybe some days, a week or something. Then I go back and collect this material. Then when I come to the studio space, these materials are shaped in various, you know, forms, geometric forms, because I was interested in how I can also stitch these spaces indirectly, stitching up these spaces together. So I use thread and needle, and yeah, I sew it myself and at times with my studio assistant. So of course I was interested in how I can also experience this kind of labor in the production of my work. So it quite also blends in terms of conceptually. So that's how I produce the work.
And yeah,
with the object in the space of the exhibition Portico of Material Memory, it was also produced with the same fabrics. It's more like a technical stuff where I try to look at the materiality of these fabrics and how this fabric can be stretched beyond just its flexibility, but how this material can also be stretched into a form of rigidity and at the same time being considered, you know, flexible.
Thank you. Super interesting. And I also really like how you use those textiles stitched together, these larger pieces, walls, you know,
yeah,
on the inside of gallery spaces, sometimes even on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in your work, Transporter 31,500 in Kumasi, you like wrapped a discarded tank trailer.
And this technique is
also very present in the work we want to get to now.
Yeah.
Which is a break from reality. Congratulations again. It was such a powerful installation you presented at the Museum Nikolaikirche in Berlin. And briefly, just to give a bit of context to listeners unfamiliar with this space, Nikolaikirche is Berlin's oldest church building in central Berlin in the Nikolai Quarter. It's largely reconstructed, but initially it was built in the 13th century. It's located not far from the city hall at Alexanderplatz. It has a long and politically important history. As a church, it has been deconsecrated since 1938. It's a monument, it's a burial site and a museum, which since 1995 belongs to Stiftung Stadtmuseum, and displays exhibitions on Berlin's urban history and contemporary art. So your work, Break from Reality, was part of the exhibition Colonial Ghosts, Resistant Spirits,
mm-hmm,
with the subtitle Church, Colonialism and Beyond. Mm-hmm. This group exhibition featured site-specific artworks by you and four other artists, Tonderei Koschke, Charlotte Ming, Yang Kun Shi and Teresa Weber. It was part of a larger decentralized exhibition, Decoloniale, What Remains?, which marked the conclusion of Decoloniale Memory Culture in the City, a five-year-long publicly funded project in which three Berlin-based civil society organizations collaborated with Stiftung Stadtmuseum, namely Berlin Postkolonial, Each One Teach One, and Initiative for Black People in Germany, ESD. And we will hear about the concept of the overall exhibition Inside Nikolaikirche and Beyond at the end of this episode. So the exhibition in Nikolaikirche opened on November 14th, 2024 and ran until September 14th, 2025. I had the chance to visit the opening and went again in the summer of 2025. And yeah, Break From Reality has two powerful media. It is a textile installation in the space and a sound installation. And if I may, I would share that in my reading, your work functions as artistic intervention by engaging two prominent media or senses, which Christian churches in general, also in the context of missionary work, proselytization in colonial contexts, usually sought to mobilize in order to build and grow their community of devout Christians. So on the one hand, the visual, for instance, representations of saints in paintings or in stained glass windows, and the sonic, and the sense of listening, thinking of sounds, liturgical music, prayers, and sermons. So I suggest we begin with the visual. Mm-hmm. Can you describe these works? Because Break From Reality, the visual part consisted of 9 huge, very impressive textile works that filled the church windows. Mm-hmm. Were they deliberately created for these windows? And maybe before we move to the persons you portray on the foreground of them, tell us again, what kind of fabrics do you use there? What histories do these fabrics have that you use in the church? Tell us a bit about the process of creating these works for these church windows.
Okay, so with this project, before the exhibition, I had a chance to come to Berlin to see the space for myself. I saw it online, and even though I had perceived what I wanted to do, but I also needed to visit the space to see it mm-hmm. for myself, so I got the chance to come. And it was a very huge space. It was very, 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 very nice place to put my work because of also its historical context. They gave me the measurement of the windows. And now when you come to Ghana, most churches, when you visit most churches, you see these kind of stained glass windows with white iconographies in the Ghanaian churches. So it became a problem for me how colonization through the missionaries created this kind of canker in our system where now we begin to look down on ourselves and see the white as more superior to us. So this became a very interesting topic for me because growing up as a Christian, I also went through this system, but I realized that it's also important for the normal, the working class people to also be aware of all these histories and how we can, as a people, embrace our own culture and find a better way of dealing with issues like colonization. So, yeah, this really pushed me in the production of this work. It's the same materials that I use. I'm talking about the working class. I'm talking about a group where I'm from. I'm talking about where I grew up. So these are the people that I mostly, you know, talk about with my work because I realize that most of these people, in a way, can read. They can also write. I don't want to say they are illiterate, but yeah. So I realize my practice become more like a bridging, you know, bridge for them on the topic of decolonization. So I use the materials that they themselves produce in terms of, and when I distributed to them, the material that they use. So I use these materials to produce the work and also reference them in my work.
Yeah, maybe to give an impression to listeners. So at the end of Nikolaikirche, like behind the area where the altar used to be, I think it was like the central window was clear, you know?
Yes, yes.
Like clear glass, but you had on the left-hand side.
And the right-hand side.
4 of your pieces in the 4 windows and then 5 images on the right-hand side. And yes. I saw on your website they were 8.4 meters long times 2 meters.
Yes.
Really
yes.
impressive works. And what I also really appreciated that you use the same techniques. Sometimes you have rectangular, you know, in rectangular ways, the fabrics are stitched together. But sometimes you even imitate the framework of a stained glass window, like at the top of it. I really like,
You know, because of the form of the window,
yeah.
because the window is permanent, it presented itself for me already, so I needed to. One funny thing is, yes, they gave me the measurement of the window, and I didn't know whether I got everything right, because at that time I realized that my arithmetic came into play when I started to calculate, you know, the angles and everything to make sure that I get the measurement right. And it was perfect that it came out
very, very well. Great. You already started about who we see here. And maybe I thought it's good to share with listeners how you open the text on Break from Reality on your website. You say, this work aims to dismantle the colonial ideologies spread by European missionaries in 19th century Ghana, which perpetuated white superiority. The project empowers black communities by portraying the black proletariat as equals to the white men. Maybe let's talk briefly about who we see here. On each of those, we see one black figure. We have six women and three men. In one case, we have a woman and a child. Who do we see here? Maybe we can start with those two, because it relates to your, you know, engaging of the communities. The two who have halos, you know, on the website, it's you have text to each of the picture photographs. So you have Ohoteni Akwa Folor and Ohoteni Oloa. Can you speak a bit about them and why you gave them a halo?
These two people are very important to me in my practice. It's pronounced as Ohoteni Olo and Ohoteni Ekweafoko. I'm very, very honored to even speak about these people, because these people were the people who held me the time where I started my practice, because distributing materials to the working class became very, very, very difficult for me at a point because of issue of spirituality. Yes, there is no more time to talk about this, but I realized that, yes, Ghana, we embrace, you know, Christianity and everything, but deep, deep down, we can't forgo our spirituality. And spirituality is different from religion. Spirituality is different from being Christian. I was finding it difficult because people were not accepting, were not taking the materials that I was distributing to them. These people embraced me, took the materials, and started to also propagate it in a sense that they introduced me to other working class women and men who now decided, okay, if you are not going to use this material for voodoo, you are not going to use it against me, because in Africa as a whole, I guess I can speak for Africa, the continent, in our culture, when we the traces of fingerprints, you know, when you wear a clothing and you don't want to even give it to people that you don't know, you get it, because you are afraid that someone might use this against you. They get it. So that was very important for me when I was starting my practice, because it also raised a lot of concern with my works. So these people helped me by distributing, by helping me to propagate my work and also give this material to a lot of working class people. And it's quite unfortunate that the time that I was producing this work, they were no more. They had passed away. And when someone passed away, these people become more of our ancestors.
Yes.
So it was very important to also represent these people with the saints. So the Ohoteni means in Chi, the Ghanaian language, it means saint. So like Saint Olo, Saint Ekweafoko, you know, when we need any help, we can now resort to them. So that's the reason why I presented them.
Great. Thank you so much. Maybe we can, before we move on to the sound aspect, just briefly talk about one more of the textile work, the one on Auntie Dede Ashikishan. I'm sorry if I butchered this.
Yeah, Auntie Dede Ashikishan, yeah.
Also, you speak about, as you mentioned, people you met, but also from Ghanaian history, from the fight for independence in the 50s. So could you speak briefly about this person, Auntie?
Yeah, Auntie Dede was very instrumental in the fight for independence, the Ghanaian independence. And this woman was a feminist and was an activist. And she founded in Kwame Nkrumah, who was the first prime minister. She organized women during the campaign and everything. So she was very, very instrumental. And I realized that even in our syllabus, in our Ghanaian syllabus, when I was in school, I didn't even know about this woman. We don't talk about these people. And I realized that it was very, very interesting to also portray this woman, tell people about the importance of women in our society and how these women always and continuously, you know, help our independence, our system, and also our economy. So that's the reason why I portray this woman. Yeah. The reason why these people are not portrayed is also due to this colonial educational system. It's really rooted in our educational system. So it's a part where now I advocate for inclusion and also trying to give space for these people who contributed in Ghana's independence.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great. Also how you link different layers of time, historical time, and work against the erasure of women in fights for independence. I think what happened in various African contexts, in narratives of fights for independence, often women were erased. Yeah.
Let me chip in this. I just also want to know that this woman was a market woman, and she was selling flour. So that's the Ashikishan, that's the Ghana pronunciation of the flour. So it's also very important in how it links to me working with the women. These people have power. I don't know whether they realize that they have this kind of power. So this woman was selling flour to support Ghana's independence. So it's very, very commendable to also, you know, put this woman on this kind of platform for people to know what she did.
Great. And again, the reference for listeners, check Percy's website where you have more information on everyone who's depicted there and honored. Let's move to the sonic dimension of the installation. I have to admit, during the opening night, many things were going on, very interesting speeches, performances. So I didn't quite notice the sound installation, but when I went back, I listened to it. It's a very interesting work, and we will just give it a listen, an extract.
That is spirituality, knowing that as a mortal being, you have limitations and that there is an imminent creator. That is to be contradistinguished from religion. What the colonizers brought was religion, spirituality packaged in man-made forms. And that is why, therefore, you have things like Roman Catholic. You have organizations such as the Anglican Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Episcopalian Church, the Methodist Church. That is religion. Religion is organization of spirituality.
You will run away. You will never go back to that house forever.
Then controlled by man, claiming to represent God. Africans are therefore spiritual.
Yeah, that was really powerful to witness that in the space of Nikolaikirche, there were two speakers with the two channels. You have these two speakers, one is speaking more passionate in this call and response style, the other more like in a calmer academic sort of describing overall phenomenons in various with a Pan-African vision. What are the layers of the sound installation? Who's speaking here? And what was important for you to convey with this composition?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I record sounds from the spaces that I visit, the market space and all that. Then I fuse these sounds with interesting speech and talks that are very interesting to my topic. One was PLO Lumumba, and he was talking about religion and how Africans are more religious, and quoting Mbiti's book, Preference, that Africans were more notoriously religious and all that. So, and the other face was also pastor in Nigeria, forgotten the name.
Prophet Seer One, right?
Yeah, that was the page, Prophet Seer One. He brought the picture of, you know, this white Jesus, and he asked the members, who is this? And they were saying Jesus, and he was asking them that what make this man Jesus. People are saying because he's white and all this. So this kind of context really talked directly to the work that I produced, and it was very, very important for me to now fuse this together. And I did this on purpose because I have these two channels, as you mentioned, and I have the recordings from the environment that I visit. One thing that I did was to fuse all this together, even though we have like channels, but when you are listening, there's this kind of chaos, and this is how chaotic religion is. So in an extension of this topic, I also try to portray through the sound the need for people to now look down deep within themselves and search for themselves what works for them. Search for their own spirituality rather than being stuck to colonial religion, which was forced on my people. So it's the sound extend the conversation for people to also now merge themselves in the topics of colonization and all.
Yeah, exactly. When you say the sound extends the conversation, I really liked how your installation made the same gesture, a gesture of empowerment across two different media.
Yes.
So that Black people, Africans, and people of African descent could see Africans represented in these church windows instead of the common white iconography in churches around the world.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, the speaker Prophet Sia One in the installation also says to his congregation in Nigeria, if you have a mirror in your house, after the service, go to that mirror, look at that mirror.
Yes,
anybody you are seeing in this mirror, that is exactly how Jesus looks like.
So a really powerful
statement there. Thank you so much, Percy, for being with us today and talking to me and to us about your working process and two of your installations, including the work in Berlin. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm grateful to be part of this.
And to expand on this significant exhibition, I had also the opportunity to speak to Nadia Ofuate-Alazar in Berlin. As manager and artistic director of the civil society organization Each One Teach One EOTO, Nadia served as director of the segment Interventions/Inventions within the 5-year project Decoloniale, Memory Culture in the City. In this function, Nadia headed also the annual Decoloniale Berlin residency. She had conceptualized the call, which led to Percy and the four other artists being selected to develop and exhibit works in Nikolaikirche and beyond. First, I asked Nadia to situate the exhibition Colonial Ghosts, Resistance Spirits in the larger Decoloniale project and to speak about the ways in which Nikolaikirche and Stiftung Stadtmuseum in fact are directly linked to German colonial history.
So Decoloniale, as you know, was a project that rotated through the cityscape of Berlin over the 5 project years, or rather the 4, because the first year, 2020, was mainly finding a location, finding office space, hiring staff, setting it up. So starting in 2021, where we started in the east of Berlin, we then from there rotated through the cityscape, and each year had a particular focus because each area of Berlin has a very particular colonial history. So we started in the east, then went on to the south, Kreuzberg-Friedrichshain. Next year we were in the west, which was mostly around anti-colonial networks in the 1930s, so between in the Weimar Republic. And then the final year, 2024, we were in the historic center of Berlin as well as the north. So Berlin Mitte, which is the historic center of Berlin, but also of German colonialism, that's the center of power. And the north, today's Wedding, is very interesting because there, amongst the other sites, we have the African Quarter. And so that was the focus. 2024 was the year under the overall title, What Remains, because we knew it would be the last year of the project. It was also the largest year because in that year, our institutional partner, Stiftung Stadtmuseum, also pitched in, and they also curated parts of the program, and they also came with a budget. So, for example, that meant that I was able to keep the artist engaged for 6 months versus 3 months like in the years before. The call, Colonial Ghosts, Resistance Spirits, showed my interest in the deep roots of colonialism, therefore the histories preceding the formal colonial phase, because Germans were already present on the African continent since the 16th century. And the Nikolaikirche, St. Nicholas Church, is part of the museums of the Stiftung Stadtmuseum. It's a deconsecrated church. It's one of the oldest buildings in Berlin, I think 13th century. And it also served as a burial site of preeminent and wealthy Berliners. And quite a few of them had a colonial history. One of them, for example, is Konstantin von Schnitters, who actually in the 16th century traveled to West Africa. He became governor of the castle Groß Friedrichsburg, which was when Brandenburg Prussia engaged in the enslavement trade. So he was the governor. He also built this slave castle. And he was buried in Nikolaikirche. And there are many other examples of burial sites. The other aspect of Nikolaikirche is that the founding director of the Stadtmuseum, the City Museum of Berlin, was Ernst Friedel. He was an ardent colonialist in the 19th century, so when Germany was still colonial power. He was part of the magistrate of Berlin, and he's therefore responsible for the founding of the African Quarter, the former colonial quarter, and especially the first two streets, Togostraße and Kamerunerstraße, which is symbolically, quite interestingly, where Ichwan Tichwan Eoto now has its bases and offices.
Thank you. Just to expand a bit on the curatorial concept, what was it? Who ended up being there? And maybe you can talk a bit more about the topic, because the exhibition, Colonial Ghosts, Resistance Spirits, its subtitle, Church, Colonialism and Beyond. And I remember your powerful speech at the opening night on 14th November 2024, how you spoke about the hubris of white men from Europe to go all around the world in all kinds of directions and, you know, tell themselves they have the legitimization to evangelize and colonize. And I also have to think of your beautiful introductory essay in the accompanying booklet, where you, by referring to a 1995 Sylvia Winter text in the title, The Pope Must Have Been Drunk, The King of Castile a Madman. Yeah, we also speak to this hubris.
Well, I find it quite interesting the extent to which colonial discourse and action has been normalized. And I think the underlying discourse, the underlying idea is very much linked to a Christian dogma that led to Europe sort of, you know, building certain hierarchies that are racial, but that are also epistemic, therefore sort of deducting its right or its responsibility to, as they said, civilize the rest of the world, but ultimately meaning to disenfranchise people, rob land, and violate cultures around the globe. So I thought it was really important and interesting also to have the center of that year's events, meaning, you know, the festival. That's where we started the annual Decoloniale Festival, which was also my responsibility, and the overall program to focus sort of on the history of the mission, on the history of the church, and linking it to colonialism of the 19th century, but also to today, because Decoloniale was not only about making colonial history visible in the cityscape, but also to make the histories of resistance visible. And that's at the core of the artist residencies. We had a jury that sort of got together once a year. We had a lot of interest from the global art communities. I think for the final year, we had more than 100 submissions. And so that was, I think, the largest of the 4 years where we had residencies.
Thank you. In this beautiful introductory essay of yours in the accompanying booklet to the exhibition, which, as I heard just recently, is still available at the museum shop at Nikolaikirche, you said that the call, quote, encouraged both site-specific and overarching approaches, particularly bold, large-scale works. So we've heard of Percy Notte's large-scale work, and I would invite you to maybe talk about one other work, if you want, for instance, the work of Teresa Weber, Entangled Histories of the Blue.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, the background of why I asked for bold, large, courageous works, maybe it's because obviously we decided a year before we actually opened what the location would be. And so I spent a lot of time inside St. Nicholas Church. It's very intimidating. It's large. It's full with artifacts. It's full with Christian works of art. You have the grave sites. You have panels. You have all kinds of things that are firmly established and cannot be touched. So what we did was to add to what was existing. And I wanted to make sure that we would sort of disturb that architecture, disturb that space, challenge it, and make powerful comments. I must say, the five artists that we invited really delivered and transformed the space for almost a year that the exhibition was up. So besides Percy's works, we had a tandem that by Charlotte Ming and Yang-Kun Shi from Shanghai and Berlin. They focused on German colonial history and presence in what is today China, because Germany had colonies there as well. We had a work by the architect Tonderei Koschke, and we had, next to Percy Norty's works, a work by Teresa Weber, a German artist of Jamaican and Greek descent. And her interest is also the philosophies of the archipelago, so both Greece and the Caribbean. And there she focuses especially on the thought of Edouard Glissant and his philosophies of relation. What Glissant says in a nutshell is that it's a way more productive way to think around the rhizome and not around the figure of the single root. So a lot of European thought is based on trying to come up with that one path or root of origin, which excludes a lot of other voices and thoughts. And Glissant thinks in the network, in the rhizome, and feels that this is a way more democratic and appropriate way to engage and to think about culture, think about history. So her work exemplifies that. Those are also large works that she hung from the ceilings. She works in fabric as well, so that corresponded very much with Percy's work. I find she used the color blue, which is also central to thinking about the economies of colonialism and the enslavement trade. Blue stands for the color of indigo. So a lot of enslaved Africans brought as artisans the knowledge of how to dye cloth with the indigo plant. I think today's denim fashion is very much based on that technology. And so we have these large blue hanging rhizomes that she also enriched with resin works. And into the resin, she embeds small objects that also tell a story.
A big thank you to Nadia Oforte-Alazar for your time and for sharing with us your curatorial perspective on the exhibition this episode pivoted around. I loved how, with her comments on Teresa Weber's work, we have come full circle with the conversation with Percy. In fact, both works address the role of textiles in colonial and post-colonial economies. And actually, Teresa Weber also initiated events in the exhibition space in which sound art and dance interacted with her work. For anyone who wants to read further on the group exhibition, also the accompanying historical exhibition in Nikolaikirche as part of the Decoloniale exhibition, the works in public space, and the larger Decoloniale five-year project, I recommend here and in the show notes the 600 pages final publication of Decoloniale Memory, Culture in the City. It is bilingual, English-German, and was published in 2025 with Falschrum Books. Rich with material, it documents this important pilot project and the stories of colonialism and resistance it highlighted, and reflects on the impulses it has given for ongoing decolonial work. That was our first episode in season 5. Thank you to Euphonica Productions for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
Sonic Interventions, a podcast by Intervening Arts.